Welcome to the Dump Him podcast, discussing all things modern day dating, learning to love yourself, and when you should just dump him, or her, or them. Hi guys!
Hello!
Welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, I thought we were going with the Dump Him podcast.
We can do it. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
The Dump Him
podcast. Why did you stop? Are you joking? I'm really mugging up today.
That wasn't on purpose, but it's kind of funny.
Well, welcome back to episode 6 of season 2.
Wow.
Yeah, we're not going to do that conversation again, Kitty. We do it every time. Wow. Pull yourself together.
Okay, no wows.
Okay, can you just, your mic is rubbing on your collar. Thank you.
Good.
How have you been, Kitty?
I've been good, actually. How have you been?
Yeah, I've been good. Yeah, keeping busy.
Yeah, it has been busy, hasn't it?
Very hectic time. But I'm excited to say that we are joined by a really fantastic guest this week.
I'm so excited.
Who I'm personally so excited to be chatting to. Her name is Millie Gooch, and she is the founder of the Sober Girl Society on Instagram. And she's also written her own book, The Sober Girl Society Handbook, which is all about her experiences after choosing to be sober. But it's kind of not like choosing to be sober in the way that people know it. She talks about dating or going on nights out with friends. And she came to the decision to stop drinking after finding that she couldn't really keep a handle on how much she was drinking, and actually it was affecting her more negatively in the long run. So it's really interesting. I found Sober Girl Society back a few months ago when I'd been sick with COVID. I hadn't actually drunk in a couple of months, and I got really into like wellness, and I was like, oh, I don't want to drink again, like I'm loving this. I was so proud of myself because it'd been like 2 months without a drink. So
famous last words.
Yeah, because I then did get drunk again before Christmas, but I'm not pointing fingers, but it definitely was not my fault. So I found Sober Girl Society just as like, yeah, it was very much my own fault, by the way.
Sorry, for the listeners, that was my face trying to work out whose fault it was if it wasn't Francesca's fault.
No, it was fault. Completely my fault. It was when I was like, I've not drunk in ages, so I'm going to be hammered, but yes, let's get another
bottle. Was that on the date?
No. That was before that. That was with your sister, unfortunately.
Classic.
So yeah, I found Sober Girl Society, and I was kind of looking through the resources, and it's quite like a fun motivational take on choosing to drink or not drink, or to drink mindfully. And now Millie's brought out her book, which has loads of tips around her own experience quitting alcohol, as well as a lot of practical tips for just life sober, but also just life in general. Like, I think you could apply a lot of the tips about wellness and confidence to your life, even if you do choose to drink. And she talks about a lot of things that I hadn't ever really thought about before that you kind of like encounter on a journey to becoming sober. Like, even like things like setting boundaries around where alcohol is kept in your home. If you live with someone who drinks, that you just wouldn't think of that as being an issue, but actually, it's really interesting to hear from her perspective. The book includes passages from other sober influencers or podcasters or writers, which is really interesting because you don't just get Millie's thoughts, although she's a really fantastic and articulate writer. And something that she tracks throughout the book is your sober girl gains. So all the things that you gain from choosing not to drink. So if anybody's at all curious about drinking, or well, not about
drinking
less or not drinking, I highly recommend checking out at Sober Girl Society on Instagram, or giving her book a read, because it's full of some interesting tips and thoughts on life in there. So once I saw that, I was like, we've got to get her on, because I want to pick her brain about dating and sex when you haven't had a drink. And yeah, really excited to have her on the podcast.
I can't wait.
So welcome, Millie, to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We're so excited to chat to you. As we've just mentioned, your book is coming out, The Sober Girl Society Handbook. So exciting.
Yeah, I know. It's come around really quickly, actually. We're only just in meetings about it, what seems like not that long ago, and now it's like in the
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. When did you start writing it?
I actually started just before the pandemic, so literally February, and it had to, like, the first draft had to be in by July, so I pretty much spent the whole first lockdown writing.
Oh wow.
Ideal.
Yeah, I keep saying I don't want to say I manifested COVID, but if it could have come at any time, that was like the perfect time for it to come, because just then, as like the world opened up again, I was like, oh, I'm done now, great.
Wow. Off
Yeah.
I go. So obviously you are the leader of the Sober Girl Society on Instagram. You kind of created a community around being sober and or being sober curious or cutting down on your drinking. What inspired you to create that community and to kind of show other women how to follow your lead?
Yeah, so when I stopped drinking, I was 26, and at the time I didn't know like a single other person who was a non-drinker, and however supportive my friends were, I couldn't chat to them about sober dating or, you know, what's the best non-alcoholic wine, because they weren't drinking it. So I, on the at the time, followed a lot of communities who all had like a shared kind of purpose or interest, whether that was like mental health or body positivity. And I kind of thought, well, there's nothing out there actually for like young women really who either don't drink or are thinking about cutting down on drinking. There just isn't anything out there. So I was like, well, I know how to use Instagram. Maybe I'll start a little something. We can all have a little nice chat. And then it just blew up without me even trying, to be honest. I didn't even put my face on Sober Girl Society until I had like 10,000 followers. It was very community based for so long.
Wow.
And yeah, it just snowballed.
Just shows that there was obviously the community there already. They just didn't know where to sort of meet and join
Yeah,
us. That's so
exactly.
nice.
That's so cool.
Thanks.
So I was enjoying having a read of your book, particularly your chapter about dating, because we've talked on the podcast a lot about dating. I've told a story of being so drunk I threw up on a date, not physically on him, but you know, in the evening. And so it's interesting to kind of hear you talk about your experiences of kind of going from that to deciding to go without alcohol completely. So when you talk about using like alcohol as a crutch when dating, it really stuck out to me when you said how gin can sometimes create a spark. So when you get drunk with someone, it gives you that kind of faux connection, and that actually there wasn't anything there at all. Why do you think that we have come to use alcohol and drinking as like a universal bonding activity with a stranger?
Yeah, I think, I mean, first of all, it's just the fact that it is so ingrained in our society. You know, we use it for absolutely everything, not just going on dates. We use it for weddings, we use it for funerals, we use it from everything, from like the minute you're born to the minute you die, basically. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that, you know, at the time it tends to kind of like lower inhibitions. People are like more relaxed and feel more free. So that's kind of like why we've used it in particular on dates. And, you know, obviously we have the saying liquid courage, because it is kind of like confidence in a glass. So when you're not feeling very confident, and usually for a lot of people that is when they go on a date, then that's like a real instant like click of the fingers, and you've got this like instant confidence that you didn't necessarily have before.
It was so funny reading that though, because as I read it, it reminded me of so many times I've like gotten drunk with a girl on a date and then been like, but he doesn't want to see me again. Or actually, now I think about it, he was kind of not my type. And hearing you kind of explain that the alcohol might have been the cause of that was something I'd never even considered before. It's like, oh my God,
Isn't it? Don't guys call it beer goggles?
Yeah, I think beer goggles is kind of like just in terms of like attractiveness, but there is kind of like a whole, you even see people as like better than they are. So I went on dates with loads of people. I went because I did like a period of drink dating and a period of sober dating, so I've done both, so I can compare them well. And when I was drunk dating, I would go on a date with someone and be like, they're the one, they're great, they're so funny, they're nice. And then I would go on a date with them like 3 weeks later, and maybe it was like a day date, and then I'd be like, oh, we have nothing in common. And it is true. Like, when it's not just that you know, it's the beer goggles, but even your inhibitions are lowered and you maybe don't notice things. And like I always say, when I started sober dating, it was so much easier for me to notice like red flags on a date, things that I just like totally ignored because I was like, oh, they're hilarious and ha, 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 I'm having such a great time. So yeah, that's a whole interesting other part of it as well.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm really questioning all my previous dates now. Oh, maybe he wasn't that funny.
No. I say even if you are like, even if you're a drinker, I would highly recommend sober dating because I genuinely think it is, and it sounds quite cold to say as well, but I think it is a more efficient way to date because like if you go out and you meet them and there isn't really like a vibe, you, and when you're not drinking, you will know straight away, like you will absolutely meet them and you will know. So then if you have a couple of drinks and you're like, oh, this isn't really working out, then you can leave. Whereas when you're drinking, there's that tendency to be like, oh, I'll just get drunk anyway. It's fine. It might make it better. And then you end up staying the whole night and you're hungover the next day and you're like, why did I do that? I didn't even like them.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of like choosing to give up drinking, because I think pretty much everybody at this point as an adult has had bad hangovers or some sort of like hangover anxiety in the past, at what point does it become something that you should look into giving up or kind of moving away from drinking?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is a whole interesting conversation, which we could probably do the whole podcast on, which is that kind of thing that, like you said, we kind of like wait until it's a problem, until we even think about it. And I was completely guilty of this. I thought, you know, I'm having really bad hangovers, I'm wasting my whole weekends, but it's not that much of a problem yet because, you know, I've still got a job and I've still got this. So sometimes like we wait and we don't even consider that actually we could just take this off the table and it might really be preventing us from, quote, living our best lives. We don't even think, oh, actually, like we have to wait until there's some kind of like obvious problem until we take it out of the equation. So I would say even if you've had one hangover and you've decided, actually, I really don't like this, I don't think it's for me, like there's absolutely no problem with you thinking, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like you don't have to wait until you've had like 10 horrific hangovers, 20 horrific hangovers. You don't have to keep going if you don't want to.
I did that off the back of the first lockdown. A week into lockdown, my friend decided to do a house party, you know, on this app. And I started drinking gin, God knows why. I had the worst hangover I've had in such a long time. I was like, I'm literally sat in my house. Like, I've not been out. I've not made use of this at all. And I then went the next 3 months. I didn't drink anything at all for the rest of the lockdown. I had a great time. I absolutely loved it. But then I started dating again, which will probably bring us on to another question that I'm sure Francesca will ask, which is, I'm going to let you ask it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, Kitty led into that perfectly. But reading your section about like working on yourself and choosing to be sober and then actually really enjoying sober dating, that really stuck out to me because I was like, I can't imagine how. Like, I'd love to know like how you tackled the kind of first date nerves or the awkward small talk when you haven't had that like liquid courage?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is, yeah, the liquid courage is exactly it. So when you go on a date and you feel unconfident, you will have that drink and then you will feel like you have this kind of like confidence or courage or whatever. But then the next day, that's taken away from you. So when that drink isn't there, you don't have that confidence, you don't have that courage. When you start sober dating, you don't have that liquidness to fall back on. So you will go on a date and then you will do it and you will think, oh, I survived that, it's fine. It wasn't like setting myself on fire. I could probably do it again. And then you build this like real innate confidence and courage that actually sticks with you and that actually you just keep building on and building on. So like the first time is always gonna be really hard. The first time you do anything sober, if it's out of your comfort zone, you'll be like, this is really weird, I don't like it. But then you'll do it and you'll be like, oh, okay, it's fine, I got through it. And then you'll feel like the next time won't be as bad. And then it just becomes normality. So the first thing I would say is just keep doing it because, if it's not fun the first time, it might be more fun the second time and then more fun the third time. It will just naturally happen with time. But in terms of like other practical things, I always make sure that I go, well, not anymore, but I did make sure that I go into a date with like a really, really good headspace. So, you know, even if that means getting your outfit ready the night before, because if you're like trying on things half an hour before you're due to go on this date and you start stressing, that's when you get a bit sweaty and you're like, oh my God. And then, exactly. So if you go into it really calm, I always say like, try and do some exercise like a few hours before to like shake off any nervous energy. Get on like a really sassy, like Beyonce style playlist. And even if you, I mean, I'm not a huge meditator, but if you're into meditating, like get yourself really centered and calm and just go into it in a best like physical headspace as possible to allow yourself to be confident. And then also just like switching your mindset, like just knowing that, you know, it's just as much about whether you like them as whether they like you. And once you start like building your confidence like that, then you start to not really care if people don't like you, because you're like, well, I'm looking for someone who I like. So it's all like a big process that all comes in at different times. But I would say like, firstly, stick with it is the most important and easiest thing you can do.
I've got a bit of a side question, but following on from this, I found during this period that I actually my conversation sober was significantly better than drunk kitty conversation. But I found that when I was going on the dates, I started off sticking with the soberness. Is that a word?
You can choose what you want.
make it up. And then I got to the point where like me and him would be in the pub, he'd sort of be four beers in and I'd still be on my orange juice. And it was, I didn't want to drink, he didn't put any pressure on me to drink, but I felt bad for him that we were sort of on different levels. So how, was that something you faced, and sort of how did you get around that issue?
To be honest, at a point for my own sort of like sanity, if you will, if someone got to a point where I didn't feel like I was on their, like, or they were on my level anymore, then I kind of would wrap up the date, because it is hard to make conversation with someone who is like four drinks five. I mean, even my best friends, once they've had four drinks, I'm like, I just don't know if I want to talk to you right now, like I'll speak to you in the morning. And so like that doesn't become fun for you really. So like at that point I would wrap it up, but I wouldn't ever say like don't ever feel bad for them, because like that's their decision, you've made your decision, you've both decided what you want to do. But I mean, some people are still very comprehensible on like 4 or 5 pints. Yeah. So it just depends like what level they're on. If they're like slurring at that point, you want to be like, yeah, making a move to go home. But if they're still chatting and getting on and things like that, then I wouldn't like worry about it too much. Some people are better on 4 pints than other people are.
Yeah, definitely.
That might make him funnier. That might help, actually.
Exactly.
So in your kind of chapter about dating, you also discussed using alcohol as a coping mechanism for heartbreaks, which again I think is something that everyone can relate to, the like first night out after you've been dumped and you just head straight
drunk texting the ex as well.
Yeah, oh my god,
I used to do that when I was like 18 as well. Like, who told me that was like a way to communicate?
God, I kept doing it till I was like 25, so yeah, better off than me.
So why do you think, because I was thinking about the Lizzo song, like, it escapes me which one it is, but you know, like, I've got a bottle of tequila.
Yeah.
That kind of like, your girls rally around you, but then the instinctive move is to like, get drunk. Why do you think that that's such like an instinctive step for people, and why it's so like ingrained in popular culture? Like, do you think there's a reason for that? Or
I think, I mean, media has a lot to do with it, songs like that. Over the years, that has just been like the portrayal on screen, is as soon as you get your heart broken, you should go out and get absolutely blind drunk. But just because something is like so glamorized in the media doesn't mean like that's going to be the best coping mechanism for you. And ultimately, a lot of people do it because they don't want to think about their ex, so they think, oh, I know, the nearest thing I can do to not remember them is to drink. But in the long run, it doesn't make it any easier, because those feelings don't go away. It's not like you wipe your memory and that's it. Like, you wipe it for a little bit and then it just comes back. And if anything, as anyone who has ever been hungover will know, it comes back even worse in the morning. So avoiding that is only really delaying that. But that's not just like categorize coping mechanisms as like good or bad. Like, people will do what they want. But if you want to get over a breakup quicker, I would say don't go out and get absolutely plastered, because I did it and it didn't work. So here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've definitely been there as well. I quite like how kind of through Sober Girl Society and through your book, you give those kind of like nice self-care tips. So like having a bath or watching a good documentary, like those are the kind of things that sometimes we overlook. People think you either need to be like getting plastered or like meditating. And actually there's a really nice like in between gap, which is like having a cup of tea and sitting on your sofa. So something I also really enjoyed was your chapter about sex. Which was
Yes. Very
interesting, and about how being sober in the bedroom can actually make sex a much more empowering experience and take away a lot of the kind of like shame and embarrassment and, dare I say it, regret from some like drunken encounters. I think for a lot of people at the moment who haven't had sex in a while, maybe because of the pandemic or, you know, other external factors like being single for a really long time.
No,
I don't know who that could possibly be referring to, not us. But it can be quite like nerve-wracking, the thought of taking your clothes off in front of a new partner. How do you like recommend that someone approaches that if they're sober?
Yeah, again, so it's all that kind of like building confidence around yourself and like in other areas. I think once you become naturally more confident in other areas, that kind of follows suit in the bedroom. And then obviously there's all the great tips in the book about, you know, getting to know yourself, mm-hmm. because that can be a problem for a lot of us. If we've always just had like really numbed out drunk sex, a lot of us don't even know what we actually like. So yeah. Once you start to know yourself and what you like, that actually will give you a lot more confidence to, you know, like be more direct in the bedroom about the things that you like. So those are the things that I think are really important. And just to remember as well that you can't selectively like numb emotions. So when you drink, if you're trying to numb like nervousness and all those other things, you actually end up like basically numbing out all the nice parts as well, so like all the good parts, so you know it just becomes very like blurry and not as like heightened and enjoyable as it could be. But even like practically as well, like I talk about it in the book, I didn't really have as many like one night stands when I stopped drinking, and that was just a fact because I waited a little bit more until I felt confidence. And like I say in the book, that's no judgment. If you are so confident enough that you can meet someone and then go and have sex and then sober, like props to you. I'm yeah. in awe. But for me, yeah, for me personally, I felt like I just needed to know someone a little bit more. And then that kind of gave me more innate courage anyway, because I felt like I trusted them a little bit. We've kind of gained that repertoire, if you will. And yeah, I think that has been important for me as well. It's just taking time to get to know someone a bit more before I whip all my clothes off, basically.
And I think a quick question, obviously men don't rule the world, girls rule the world, you know. Yeah. Sort of vibe, but how have they on the whole taken to sort of dating someone who is sober? And obviously if some guy is an asshole, then he's out of our life, you know, he's not important. But you know, there probably are people that you quite like or friends that you like, and they're sort of thinking, you know, actually friends are separate, keep friends separate now, but for guys, how do they perceive and take to dating someone who is sober the whole time?
So I thought when I first started drinking that boys would be like, oh, she's boring, she's like uptight, she's this, she's that. But I honestly found the opposite. I would say 95% of people were like, that's actually really attractive that you will come on a date and you will like have enough confidence that you're going to come in here and not drink. Like men actually really respected it, which I was really shocked at, because I thought it would be the opposite. There were, granted, about 5% of boys who were like, that's boring, that's whatever. But it's in like Catherine Gray's book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, she says telling someone that you don't drink is the ultimate dickhead detector, which I like fully agree with. Because when someone came back to me and said something awful, I was like, well, this is fantastic, because now I don't have to waste my time on a date with you, because we are not going to get on. Like, even if you think that about someone who's like, who doesn't drink, the fact that, you know, like someone is just trying to better their life and you're against that, I don't want to be with someone who's like that. Like, what's the next thing? I say I'm going to the gym and you're like, oh God, like, no, I don't want to be with someone like that. So it actually saved me a lot of time of dating people that I didn't want to date. So if they weren't like for it, that was only a good thing in my book. But I would honestly say I was really surprised that most men thought it was actually a very attractive quality. So there you go.
Maybe this is where we're going wrong. This is how we'll get dates.
I know, I'm turning up and ordering a glass of wine. I'm like, that's immediately gone.
No.
But I've been say something else.
I was going to say, to bring friends then back to the table, how did they respond and react? And did you lose friends in the process? Did you gain new friends? You know.
I was really lucky, I have to say, because, well, I say that my friends were initially like ambivalent. Is the word I use to describe it, because I had said I'm never drinking again about 300 times at this point. So when I said it this time, they were like, yeah, okay, cool. Like they genuinely thought I wouldn't stick to it. So it's not that they were unsupportive, but they just didn't believe me, and I don't blame them, to be honest. So that's fine. And then I think a few months went past. I gave up in February, and it got to about June, and I was going on holiday with two of my friends, and they were like, oh, but you are going to drink on holiday, aren't you? And I was like, no, I'm not drinking on holiday. And then I think they suddenly thought, oh shit, she's actually quite she's quite serious about this. And then that's when they became like really supportive and like really got on board. But I mean, there were a few mutters of, oh, you're not going to be fun anymore, you're not going to be this. But I'm not like gonna blame them for that, because it's so ingrained in society. And had that been like one of my other friends 3 years before I stopped drinking, I would have said exactly the same. So I have been really lucky that they have been really supportive. But I would say as well, naturally, as I've got older, my friends have started to calm down. So like, I'm going to be 30 this year. A couple of my friends have started having kids. If I'd have given up when I was like 22, 23, I think I would have found it much harder, because they would have been in their like peak partying prime. So I have spoken to a lot of girls like through Sober Girl Society that their friends haven't necessarily stuck around, and or even just that they've realized that kind of alcohol is the glue that is holding their friendship together, and without it they don't actually have that much in common. But I have to say, I have been quite lucky, actually.
Yeah, it's worked out well.
Yeah, it's done all right. I did it at the right age, I think.
Yeah, got the friends, got the guys. I mean, what's not to like?
So, no, exactly, I'm selling it to you, aren't I?
When you talk about like quitting alcohol, do you think there could be like a happy medium between like drinking sometimes and not drinking other times? Or do you think that it's easier to go cold turkey and try and like completely cut it from your life just to get that clean break? Or is there a way to phase out booze? Asking for myself, to be honest.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a total mix. Like for me, if I tried really, really, really hard to moderate, I probably could, but it would be exhausting for me. It was exhausting for me because I've tried it before. So whether that was like, oh, I'm definitely not going to do shots, I'm only going to have three drinks, I'm only going to drink on Saturdays, and like I was putting so many rules on myself. And then like if I had like four or five drinks, I'd beat myself up more the next day, because I'd be like, oh, I said I was only going to have two or three. And then it was just so like complex and hard. And also, I always say, like, moderating alcohol is not like moderating chocolate. So the way that alcohol actually affects your brain is it affects your prefrontal cortex. So that's the rational decision-making part of your brain. So you can't make rational decisions when you're drinking, or very well. So once you have, like, even if you said, I'm only having three drinks, that's it, I'm only having three drinks. Once you have those three drinks, your ability to, like, make decisions is not the same as it was three drinks ago. So when you're three drinks in, you'll go, oh, go on, I'll have a fourth. Oh, go on, I'll have a fifth. Like, even if you've said you would only stick to three. So for me, that is exhausting, and taking it off the table completely has been a lot more freeing. And even for like other people, so if you're like sober curious and say you drink at some occasions but not all of them, then every time you go to a new thing, someone's gonna be like, oh, were you, are you drinking today? You drank at so-and-so's birthday, so why aren't you drinking at mine? And that's quite exhausting in itself. So when people know you're a non-drinker, like me now, 3 years later, no one even asks if I'm going to have a drink. Like, it's not even a question. So that for me is really easy. So I prefer the idea of not drinking at all, but I do have a lot of friends who are relatively sober curious. I mean, my boyfriend, he can drink like two beers on a Friday night and then not have anything for like 3 weeks, and he's perfectly happy with that. So there is definitely a happier medium. I always say there's no healthy way to drink, because it's alcohol, it's a toxic substance, it's not healthy, and we can all pretend it is, but it isn't. But there is definitely a healthier way to drink. So that's what you have to work out if that's what you want to do.
Do you? I hate to ask this question, so I am really sorry.
No, go.
You might know what's coming, but Do you ever feel like you're missing out?
No, I honestly don't, because it's been so long now that this is like my new normal. And again, I also think like the age that I am, my friends don't really like go out till till 6 a.m. at Fabric anymore. I don't look at that and like they're not doing so I don't ever feel like I'm missing out. Like the most outrageous they get is like on a hen do, and even then I'm like, oh, okay. So I don't think the only thing that I ever like miss about drinking is that like total kind of like shutdown of your brain, where like you stop overthinking, you stop being insecure. But that is again just something that I've had to learn how to do differently, and I've learned new ways to relax, I've learned new ways to shut off my brain. So I don't ever feel like I'm missing out anymore. And also it's a shame, but I know too much. When you know so much, it's like when people go vegan and they know all what goes on behind the scenes, and like sometimes ignorance is bliss. And unfortunately I know too much about alcohol and what it does to you now. So yeah, even if I wanted to go back, I don't think I could.
Yeah, I sympathize with the vegan part. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Knowing too much is sometimes very annoying.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, do you feel, and you might have sort of covered this already about missing out, but I think like a lot of my social life particularly revolves around like alcohol. So for example, like going to a wine tasting with friends. Do you feel that you can't join into things like that? And has your kind of like weekends or weeks, have they changed slightly? Like I'm thinking of like office drinks, that kind of thing. Do you have to like, do the activities, I don't know how I'm asking this, the activities that you do, is that like changed from what it would be, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I still do others, like do normal, well, I go to normal drinking stuff. So I go to Bottomless Brunches, and I went on a hen do last year and they did a trip to a gin distillery, and I was there at the gin distillery as a non-drinker. So like, I don't have to completely withdraw myself from those situations, but I have made like a really conscious effort in the last few years to do different stuff and encourage my friends to do it. And at first, I think it's really hard, because going to a bar or going to a bottomless brunch or going to a pub is a really easy default. You know, like it's so-and-so's birthday, what pub are we going to?
Yeah.
And making a conscious effort to do other things. Some people are like, oh no, like it's too much effort, can we not? But actually the things I've organised over the last few years are the things that my friends talk about like most. So they'll be like, oh my god, do you remember that time for your birthday we went whitewater rafting? That was the best day ever. And I'm like, yeah, wasn't it? It was so much fun. And like, we just done so many random things, like axe throwing and paddle boarding. I went on an alpaca trek, like all those things. And it just becomes a bit richer. I know that sounds a bit like silly, but your life just becomes like full of more things that aren't just going to the pub, because it kind of forces you to do different things. Because I can happily go to the pub, but I wouldn't happily go every single weekend just sitting there watching other people drink. So I'm happy to go once in a while. That doesn't bother me in the slightest, but I like doing other things as well now, which is, I think, only added to my and my friend's life, even though they didn't want to admit it at first.
And everyone remembers it after that. There's no like, what happened?
Exactly.
Like,
you get your money's worth. Exactly. All our nights out have rolled now, especially with like getting older and having bad memory. They've all rolled into one night. We're like, was that night? No, that was that night. What was that night that we ended up in the kebab shop? No. Whereas now, like these things, they know exactly what they are and when we did them.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love it. I mean, I'm doing dry January, and actually it's just like, I think once you've done a period of being sober and you realize how great it is, it, like, I think I got drunk once in the whole of last year, which I think with, especially with lockdown, people kind of went one way or the other, and I, you know, gratefully went that way.
Yeah.
And actually I've loved it. I've had a great year because of it. So I'm really not that keen to sort of start off again.
Maybe we've got a new recruit.
I would love to be honest. I'd love to be fully sober.
I think she can talk a big game just because she's stuck in the house in lockdown. I reckon the minute we're allowed back out to bars.
That's what I'm worried about. That's why I think I've done really well, because I've not had, you know, I've not had someone let's go for a drink, or let's go to the pub, or let's go to the nightclub. I mean, I can't imagine myself sober in a nightclub. And I don't really like nightclubs. So I think I almost overcompensate with those because I drink because I don't really want to be there.
Yeah, but see, that's such a big thing. Like, this is what you learn as well. You learn the things that you actually like doing. I used to go to so many, like, festivals. I've got friends that are really into, like, drum and bass and garage. And I used to go to all these festivals and I wasn't comfortable there. So I just used to get absolutely blotto. And then when I stopped drinking, I was like, I'm not doing those things anymore. I don't like them. So you really start filtering down on what you like doing and what you don't want to waste your time doing.
Have you survived a nightclub sober? Like, have you experienced that yet?
Yeah, I've done a fair few, actually. On my first night out, I was being really stubborn and all my friends were like, you're going to be so boring. So I was like, I'm going to show you. And I was out in Shoreditch till like 3 a.m. having a great time until my friend lost her bag and then I had to help her find it and that was quite annoying. But apart from that, I was like, this is great. I can do this. I kind of pushed myself in at the deep end, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend to everyone. But pulling that like Band-Aid off really like early actually really helped me because I was like, well, I've done that now, so nothing else can be as terrifying. I think sometimes there can be a tendency to overthink it, like probably because you've spent a lot of time in lockdown now, you're like, oh god, going to a club sober, that's going to be like a lot. Whereas I'm
scared of going in drunk at this point. I don't have to go in front of people. Yeah. So maybe sober will be the way forward, so I can like practice some moves and then replicate them in front of people rather than flailing. I think it's interesting how you've kind of, I guess, talking about your friendships, like you're not like the bag carrier, the Uber driver. Like, I think it's nice to hear that you're able to still be like the fun one staying out and not just be like the responsible like mum of the group, I guess.
Yeah, I think there gets to a point sometimes when I'm like, I've had enough now, I'm gonna leave. And then sometimes I think of it as like paying them back for all the times they looked after me, because I was always the worst, always. I was always the ringleader. So many, many years they've spent like putting me in taxis. So sometimes I like to shepherd them. And then other times as well, it's a good reminder for me, like I'll be at a bottomless brunch and everyone will be laughing and I'm like, oh, like, am I missing out? And then 3 hours later, like someone's throwing up on the floor, someone's crying and I'm like, no, this is great. This is why I'm sober. So even sometimes it's like a good visual reminder of like, god, I'm glad that's not me.
I think it's also, you know, when you go for breakfast the next day and you have left early and they're all hungover and telling you what happened. I was like, actually, yeah, I don't need to be there.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah,
yeah, I feel great, you know. Yeah. I'm feeling sick eating my breakfast.
Yeah, I love staying over with them. Like if we all go out, we all stay at one of my friends' houses and I wake up in the morning and I'm like, good morning, and they're like, oh, go away.
But don't worry, I'll make you a bacon bath with coffee.
Yeah, I'm always coffee lady.
I would just be deliberately going around like making extra loud noise, being like, oh, does your head hurt? Let me just slam the door.
I do that as well.
Love that. Actually, Kitty, we went to a party once and we didn't have that much to drink and went to bed early. That was like my proudest achievement at that point.
Which one was that?
I can't say it on the podcast.
When was it recently?
Like a couple of years ago. We slept in your car. And then we went to that like farm shop on the way back and we had breakfast at like a reasonable time in the morning. And we spent the entire journey back being like, we were at a party, but we were in bed at like 11:30. How did we do that?
The music stopped.
Okay, yeah, let's make it sound like we were actually making a conscious decision.
So yeah, so you were forced to.
We had nothing else to do.
Please, that was like my proudest, like, not getting hammered experience. I was quite pleased with that.
I mean, to be fair, if that had been me, I would have found an after party. So you did good to, like, not seek out an after party.
I think, unfortunately, when you're with me, if sleep is the option anywhere, it's going to be sleep. I don't care what the other options are. So it was either drinking more or sleeping that Francesca got pulled to bed.
No, I willingly came. I'm trying to get better. That's why I've been following Sober Girl Society. So I found you via the page, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was following that first because I was quite, like, just curious about, like, the mindset and kind of starting to move towards making those changes. And I think it's a really great, like, platform to talk about those issues and also the things that you don't really think about sometimes, which has been super nice.
Awesome. Oh, that's nice to hear.
Cool. So what are your kind of next steps for Sober Girl Society and kind of where do you see it going in the next few years? Obviously, your book is out, but what's your kind of plan for step two?
Yeah, so that last year we started really kind of, well, we started in the year before, but doing the events, because that is the thing that I love most about the platform, is like getting people together. So we started running our like signature bottomless bruiseless brunches. We started doing our sweat fest, which basically show people that they can dance without a drink. So you two are welcome to come. So I'm hoping once we're all vaccinated that we can start doing that again. That would, I would love to be my like big focus for towards the end of this year, or mid of this year if we can, is just start getting those events back up and get them like up and down the UK. So we started in London, we did our first one in Manchester, and then we had an event scheduled for Liverpool, which was in April, which we then had to cancel because of the pandemic. So that is the main thing that I'm missing, and I've been putting off, we've done a couple of virtual events, but I don't know about you guys, but I am zoomed out, and I think a lot of other people are as well. So especially when there's like 20 of you on a Zoom, it's really hard to like get the vibe, and you just want to hug people. And so I've been doing a few for people, but it's not, it hasn't felt like it's the same. So trying to get the events back in real life is going to be like number one priority.
Oh, I'm definitely there.
Yeah, come. We'd love to have you.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I say, like, you don't have to be sober to come. It's just an opportunity to come and see that you could actually do stuff without drinking. Like, the if you came to the bottomless brunches, if you just walked in off the street, you'd be like, this is like any other bottomless brunch. They're just as loud, they're just as raucous, but there's no alcohol, so it's great.
Oh, I love that. Have the rest of your day. I mean,
yeah. You're done at 1 o'clock and you're like, this is great.
You haven't lost the entirety of your Saturday and most of your Sunday as well.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh. Millie, we have to ask you, we might have forgotten to ask you on the email, so I apologise that. Do you happen to have a pet peeve of this week?
A pet peeve? Just of this week?
Well, no, I mean, it can be in general.
We have a segment on the pod where we discuss a pet peeve that's bothering us. It can be about anything.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm trying to think.
Sorry, it's quite a tricky one to put you on the spot about. Yeah.
No, I was just trying to think. The thing that's annoyed me this week is everyone's snow pictures, because for some reason I have no snow where I am. Like, absolutely zero. And other people, it's like they're in Antarctica. Honestly, they've got snowmen, like, so tall. So my pet peeve this week is the weather, that there's no snow whatsoever.
That's fair. I really sympathise. I could see the snow coming through my window. And then I went on a run the next day, and people had built snowmans, just like the distance I was running, which wasn't far. And I was thinking, how did I have so little?
Just down here.
I have to make a snowman.
This one is it. I'm in Kent, and like some of my friends that are in London, I could probably drive to them in 20 minutes. I'm like, how are you 20 minutes away? And you literally look like you're in the North Pole. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, we had that as well. I looked outside my window. I'm in East London, but I looked out and it was like the tiniest little sprinkling. And then I'm seeing other people in London who are in full, like you said, like snowmen. They're at like their ankles in snow. I'm like, did the wind not hit me?
Yeah.
What's happened there?
Yeah, so that's my pet peeve, the instability of the weather.
That's good.
It's a great one.
I like it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been so great to chat to you. We will leave a link to purchase your book in the description for anyone who wants to check it out. And we'll also link to Sober Girls Society for anybody who wants to hear more about drinking less or not drinking at all, if they've been inspired by what we said. So thank you so much. It's been awesome to chat to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Oh,
anytime.
Please do come back. We've got a lot to learn. We've really got some things to work on over here.
Maybe I'll just check in on you every month just to see how you're getting on.
Tune into the podcast and it'll either be us being like, we're not drunk, or we are hungover.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I loved that, actually.
Me too.
I found it refreshing. I found it thoroughly enjoyable. And it's so good to hear that someone has had such a positive experience with going sober, because it just seems like such a daunting thing, doesn't it? Like, okay, right, wake up, I'm not going to have any more alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, that's crazy when you really think about it, when you think about how society finds us and alcohol and pretty much, you know, as Millie said, everything we do seems to revolve around alcohol.
Yeah.
Never have it again is an incredible achievement, and something Millie, I think, should be very proud of for herself and the whole community she has built, and for anyone else who has decided to go sober.
It's so interesting the fact that choosing not to drink now is something that you have to like come out and say, and like,
yeah,
and like the fact, I mean, it's amazing that she's managed to like grow this whole community and write a book around choosing not to drink, when actually like alcohol is like a toxin. It's like you wouldn't write a book about choosing not to drink poison, like, or choosing not to like play Russian roulette, like. So it's so interesting. But I think it's so important, because like drinking has just become like a default setting of like, oh, I'm not feeling confident, I'll have a drink. I know I'm definitely guilty of that.
A therapist once said to me, she said, if you ever associate drinking with any sort of emotion, it's gone too far.
Really?
If you feel happy and you go, I want a drink, nah. If you're sad and you go, I want a drink, nah.
Yeah.
And then I did sort of wonder, well, then at what point does it come?
Yeah,
you know, if you can't have any emotion and decide to have a drink. But I thought it was really interesting, and it slightly follows in that pattern as well, I think.
Yeah, because I definitely like, I don't know whether I'm alone in this, maybe I'm crazy, but I definitely have like a period in my life that I look back on where I didn't have like a healthy relationship with alcohol, and I was absolutely drinking far more. I don't know what level you'd count it at, and I wasn't like waking up and drinking, but in terms of like finishing work and then drinking like a bottle of wine every night was like 7 days
normal.
Was like obscene,
yeah,
and so like bad for me. And I've kind of come out of that now, and I'm absolutely not like that at the moment.
Yeah,
I drink on the weekends, and I've got a lot better at moderating it. But it's interesting to hear kind of her perspective on how you can actually learn to be a more confident person once you take that crutch away. I think definitely something I kind of want to give a try.
Definitely. And honestly, definitely. I obviously am nowhere near what Millie's done, so I'm not trying to claim that in the slightest. But it really, once you have been put in that situation and the social situation and you haven't had alcohol, I now, if I have an important thing going on or an important social conversation that needs to be had, there is no way I will be drinking, because I know my chat is so much better sober.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I like went for a social gathering and didn't drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if it's just like a mulled wine or a like a one glass, it's still so part of what we do. It's really interesting to hear that like there is a way to not to move away from that.
Yeah, and I think even with one glass, I literally can now physically feel my brain slowing down when I'm really? Trying to think of a conversation. Yeah, deadly serious. I'm not so just saying
I
this
just feel like I get funnier. I'm like, here we go. Out comes the banter. She's suddenly hilarious.
I think I got funnier anyway.
Yeah.
Like, over the last year, I've got funnier.
It's the podcast. I bring out the best in you.
Listen back to episode one, guys. I'm boring as fuck.
But we were drinking when we recorded then.
Exactly. And like
I can't remember the last time that we drank and recorded.
No, I probably wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, yeah. I think you start saying some mad stuff when you've had a couple of drinks.
Well, also, some of our old ones are a bit rambly.
Yeah.
You can sort of tell with that we've been drinking with sort of a lack of a theme and structure.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Anyway, please keep listening, everyone.
It's getting better, guys.
Yeah.
We're on the up.
But yeah, that was so interesting. I actually really enjoyed that conversation. I mean, I always really enjoy our conversation with guests, but I think that was like a lot to think about and super interesting to hear from Millie's point of view. So yeah, Definitely. Thanks for joining us.
Massive thank you, Millie. Really appreciate it.
And yeah, as mentioned, we've got the link to purchase Millie's book in the description of the episode. And we'll also tag the Sober Girl Society Instagram. So go and check them out over there. You can also follow Millie herself. And I definitely recommend checking them out for anyone who's even a little bit erring on the side of being curious about having one less drink at the weekend or having a sober evening.
We are the Dumpling Podcast.
We are.
Introduce themselves, you know. I am Kitty James. And this is Francesca Coates on the Dumpling Podcast.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if people will actually know whose voice is whose. But if anyone's wondering, Francesca is the funny one.
I'm the one who sounds really... Actually, I had a message this morning saying someone was listening and found your voice very soothing.
Me?
Mm.
Who is that? Is it a guy? Do they want a date?
No.
Okay.
And I just think I sound manly. So there we go.
I sound manly.
There you go, guys. If it sounds like a man, it's Kitty. If it's soothing, it's Francesca.
Look, I'm not going to argue with that.
Anyway,
take it, guys. Guys, the Dumping Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, email, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You probably know that if you're already here.
All good retailers.
I want some merchandise. Oh. Buy our t-shirt.
Let us know if you would buy merch.
Please. We'll wait. See you in 5 years' time when the answer may be yes.
Yes. Alrighty. Thanks.
Alrighty.
For everyone.
Bye.
Have a great week. Love you. Bye.
Bye.